All right, hello, listeners, all one of you. It's Pat Scanlon here with Unconscious Dream. I'm doing my weekly podcast. This is the second week. That's what I decided over the week is that I'm going to do it weekly for now, and then maybe that'll change, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. So, what do we have to talk about today? Well, sadly, I don't have any interviews yet. I think that will change once I get back to college, because I'll have peers and friends that I can interview, and some of them do have some interesting viewpoints, especially my religious studies friend Tom and my sociology friend Ari. They've got some interesting viewpoints, so I'm planning on getting them on the show and stuff like that, and then talking about stuff, and then maybe my friend from childhood, who's been in school with me for the past, like, 15 years, which is fucking crazy. So yeah, I'm just talking to you from my car again. You can tell because the sound quality is still shitty. Better than the first one, though, hopefully. It's a really bumpy road. Parma's got no fucking money, so that's the problem we're in right now. But, yeah, I'm just here to talk to you guys about some different ideas I've had over the week, and yeah, just, it's me talking again, just me, but, I'm sure the one listener that listened last week will probably still like this one, assuming they like that one, but, that's kind of a big assumption there, a little bit. So right now I'm driving to my girlfriend's house. She lives a little far away from me. It's kind of annoying. But I won't be having to drive for a while now because I'm going back to school tomorrow morning. I did want to go back to school. We start Tuesday because Monday's Martin Luther King Day, so we have like a teach-in. And in honor of that, I wanted to talk about some race relations and stuff like that. What's kind of come to my mind recently, not necessarily over the past week, but past month or two, definitely over the new year. So yeah, so I'm heading to my girlfriend's house. She and my parents together kind of guilted me into staying tonight. I wanted to go back tonight and get drunk, of course, without having to worry about getting ready for school on Tuesday, but it doesn't look like that will be happening, sadly, so I will be sober tonight, but I'll live. If I was more worried than I am right now about getting drunk, then I think I'd have to start thinking about checking myself into some kind of rehab, especially because I'm not even 21 yet. But, yeah, so I'm heading to my girlfriend's house. We're going to hang out for a little bit. Yeah, that's pretty much all I'm doing today. It's going to be kind of a boring day. No offense to my girlfriend, but I just woke up anyway, so it's kind of my fault, too. I've been waking up really late the past couple weeks. I'm on break, so I can kind of afford to do that, but just makes you feel dirty, like you don't do anything. So yeah, let's just dive into it. So the last couple days ago, well, we've been hearing about a lot of celebrity deaths: David Bowie, Alan Rickman, and then there's a lesser known NFL football player, Lawrence Phillips. Those people have died over the course of this past week. David Bowie is someone I look up to a lot, and his son even went to my college, so there's a little connection there, a degree of separation. But you know, part of the reason I look up to him is because he did like Cleveland a lot. There's a lot of studies or articles that say that Cleveland is the city that kind of broke him for his fame, and that's why he liked Cleveland. That's why Bruce Springsteen liked Cleveland. Couple other artists like that. We had a pretty good rock and roll scene back in the day, and it's still not bad. We have more of an indie rock scene now, but so yeah, there's kind of a connection there, and I kind of always liked his music and listened to him. He's got a different personality, you know. Alan Rickman, didn't really know who he was. I had to look up who he was, I'll be honest, and then I realized, oh, he's Snape. Of course, yeah, I've seen him in that. Seen him in Die Hard. So, yeah, I knew who he was. I just couldn't put a face to the name. And Lawrence Phillip. Many of you probably don't know. He was an NFL football player for a short period of time. He was drafted. Played, I think, about 3 years. I forget who with. I want to say the Chiefs. They weren't who drafted him, though. I think Miami drafted him. I'm not sure about that. In the late 90s, mid to late 90s. Then he got in some trouble with assaults and different crimes that landed him in jail. He was serving a long period of time, I want to say a couple life sentences or so. And then his cellmate, about a year ago, turned up dead, and it was assumed Lawrence had killed. He had choke marks on his neck and stuff like that. So he was in the middle of that battle, that legal battle, and along with other things, he probably was a little messed up in the head. And he had some troubles mentally. So he ended up taking his own life, or that's what assumed to be right now, is that he ended up taking his own life, and it looks like the facts are pointing towards that. And he died a couple days ago. So it had me wondering about a couple things, had me thinking about prison and what prison's like in our country, which is the U.S. United States, as you've probably heard multiple times, it's one of those great factoids people like to list off, has the highest incarceration rate of any country, or any free country, for that matter. So, yeah, the idea is we're not so free. We like putting people in prison. A lot of times it's for stupid stuff like drug busts, simple things like marijuana, possession, or dealing, which, yeah, it's not great, but doesn't seem to be the thing that should be keeping people in jail. So I was thinking about it, and prison has got to be a rough experience. My hope is that I'll never end up there for any extended period of time, or at all for that matter, but especially for an extended period of time. I was thinking about it, like, these people probably, you know, they don't have cell phones, they don't have tablets, they don't have their own personal computers. They probably don't realize what's going on in the world. I'm sure that a lot of them didn't even know David Bowie died, or might still not know that, which is just a crazy thought, that something that, like, we just take for granted because we see it everywhere, they wouldn't know about. And just imagine how hard it would be to reassimilate yourself back into society after being away from it for so long. It's kind of messed up when you think about it, that we expect these prisoners to go to this place, serve their time, and then, if they have a chance for parole, once they are paroled, to function completely successfully within society and not get sent back. What kind of programs are we doing in those prisons? I don't know. My guess is that there are less programs to help the prisoners than there are ways to make sure that they don't get out. So I'm guessing that we're spending 4 times the amount of money on ensuring that prisoners don't get out of the prison than we are spending on ensuring the prisoners are educated and helped mentally and successful and able to function in society and contribute to society once they get out of prison. And I think the scariest part about that is that nowadays we're leaning towards a privatized prison facility. And that's a scary thought if you think about it. The downside of that, the potential downside of that, and that's it's already been seen, is that when you can run a prison for profit, you stop thinking about the prisoners as people, and they become numbers and potential areas of profit margins that you can eke a little more money out of them. And that means running less programs, not helping the mentally challenged or insane. And, you know, that's what's wrong with the private prison system, is it leaves too much up to a private company that can control the destiny of thousands and thousands of people's lives. And that's why the candidate I'm supporting, I'll tell you this, is Bernie Sanders. He's strongly against this. And I can understand why. Because, you know, that is kind of fucked up. To think that, you know, they're just some kind of pawn in a system. And that's why, you know, that's why I'd never go to a hospital that's a profit, for-profit, privatized hospital. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Maybe private practices, but large-scale hospitals, I don't think there are any. Maybe there are a couple, I can't think of any. But, you know, it's even worse when it's a prison, because that's all aspects of life. That's not just, you know, when they're sick. Prisons take care of all aspects of a person's life. It's like the worst fucking cruise you could ever go on. It's got programs, it's got food, it's got a place to stay, it's got healthcare and stuff like that. That's what a prison is. It's like the worst fucking cruise you could ever go on. Luckily, you don't really have to pay for it. Because that's what taxes pay for. I mean, if you were paying taxes before you went to prison, I guess you're kind of paying for it in that way. And yeah, if it's a privatized prison, I don't even know where the money comes from. Privatized prisons, I guess the government. I don't know. I don't know enough about that subject, so I'm not gonna pretend I do. But yeah, so basically, it's an all expense paid cruise to hell. And though a lot of people do deserve time in prison, there are people that don't. There are people that have had struggles in their life that need help, and that's kind of should be the main goal of prison, is to make sure that people understand how not to get back into prison, assuming they're the type of people that have a chance for parole and aren't going to be there for life. And if they're the people that are going to be there for life, I think the goal should be to help them consider what they've done in their lives and repent on that. And not in some religious way or even a spiritual way, just in a moral attitude about life in general. It could be as secular as all get out, but I think that should be the goal of a prison. And, you know, the worst part about that is that's assuming that the people that are in prison are the people that did commit the crime. And DNA testing that, you know, went through people on death row showed that a lot of times they weren't the people that committed the crime. And that's a scary thought. I don't have the number on that, but I know it's a surprisingly high number. If you heard it or looked it up right now, you'd be in shock as well. Because you'd think that the purpose of our judicial system would be to ensure that the people that are going to prison are the people that should be going to prison, and that we should be preventing as much as possible people from having to go to prison. That's the main goal of the judicial system, is to ensure that people don't go to prison. And that's why they've kind of proven that deterrent systems don't work that well. They work, but maybe there are better options. And I don't know what those better options are, but I'm not going to propose one. But it's something that we could look into as a society is think about it. Our deterrent systems are usually the best choice. Maybe we should be looking at at-risk people and helping them with educational programs and stuff like that. And I think this gets back to the original statement that education is our number one importance. Another reason I'll like Bernie Sanders. In inner city Cleveland, I know people that teach at schools that they've basically given up on these kids. I know my distant relative teaches at a school called Castle in downtown on the east side, and essentially the school's for troubled kids who don't have a shot at any other kind of Cleveland City schools. And there are some decent Cleveland City schools. Overall, they're not very good, but there are some decent ones, like some magnet schools and some science schools and art schools that are pretty good and will put you in good standing to get into college and higher education. But these kids will never have that chance because they had a rough life growing up. They turned to the wrong people, the wrong things, and they've been misplaced in society and ultimately forgotten about. That's the whole point of the school. The school is designed to keep these kids away from the kids that might actually succeed. And that's the whole point of it. There is no other point to it. And traditionally, especially in Cleveland, one of the most racially segregated cities, believe it or not, by area, geographically, most of these kids are Black Americans. So, what does that say to you? You grew up a certain skin color and you're destined to go to a shitty school, end up in jail, try to be put back into society, and then probably end up back in jail because, you know, a large percent of those in jail are people that are returning to jail. And a large percent of them are Black. There are more Black Americans imprisoned per capita than there are white Americans or any other minority for that matter. But there are more minorities imprisoned per capita than there are whites by far. And that's per capita. That's not overall because white Americans are the majority. So they're like, I think white Americans make up like 70% of the U.S. or so. Black Americans make up about 12%. But the point is, you grow up a certain skin color, and you're destined to be fucked, essentially. And that's not necessarily true. There are always exceptions to rules. I've taken math long enough in my life to understand that annoying reality, but the general case is that, yeah, you grew up a certain skin color and you're kind of screwed. Or at least you're going to have a tougher time. You might not be genuinely screwed, but you're going to have a tougher time than the white kid next to you, even in the same fucking neighborhood. So that kind of brings me to my main point. And I'll say that this might be semantics to some people, and this argument kind of annoys me. But a large argument now is that racism, by definition, has to be institutional. If it's not on an institutional basis, it's not racism. I don't know what they consider it then, maybe just bigotry or something like that. But I was talking to a family member recently, and they made the point, well, white people have racist motives thrown against them all the time by Black people. I won't mention who this person is because they're mildly racist and that might be embarrassing to them. But they're a family member of mine. And while I do agree there are sometimes racist motives thrown against white people, I wouldn't say it's the overwhelming picture. And it's a different kind of racism. It's individual racism. There is no institutional racism against white people. There is no institutional racism against white people. And this is why many people say there is no racism against white people, because they're going off the definition that racism has to be institutionalized. I don't agree with that. I think it's semantics to say that. I think the reason we have modifiers, adjectives, like institutional versus individual, is why we should use them. We have them, so we should use them. So I think racism in general is the bigotry or maltreatment of someone based entirely off their race. So I think that works for any race. You can be racist against any race. However, I think there is a difference, obviously, between institutional and individual racism. I think institutional racism is much, much, much more harming. Individual racism will ruin your day. I'm not going to argue with that. Might even end up sending you to the hospital or killing you. Now, I'm not saying that's a super common thing, but it could happen. So individual racism isn't great. It's kind of like getting punched in the balls once. It hurts like a motherfucker, but you have a good chance of recovering from that. You'll probably have kids again. Whereas institutional racism, which the majority of Black America, just all of Black America, essentially, just by being Black, sees in America, that's more like being kicked in the balls by a line of humans. Just they come up one after another, kick you in the balls, drop you to the ground, and then the last one comes up and just fucking cuts off your balls. So, institutional racism, way more harming, often permanent in our society right now. It's something you can't get away from. And that's what we need to be focusing on. And why does institutional racism exist? Well, it has a lot to do with money, like anything. Without the personal aspect of institutional racism, which is, just assumptions that the majority, the white majority, makes about a person of color. Without even going into those, stuff that is widespread institutional racism is stuff that's perpetuated by a government. Yeah, our government's run by a Black guy. It perpetuates institutional racism. And that's not because Obama's racist towards his own people. It's because it's hard to get a lot of things changed in society over even 8 years. Over 4 years, it's almost impossible. 8 years, it's very, 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 very challenging. So the problem is that we don't have good education for those who need it. We don't have good opportunities for people of color. And that's the real, that's what government's doing. They're basically ensuring that Black people stay in a certain part of a neighborhood until eventually the gays and then the hipsters gentrify it. They don't get into the schools they need to get into. They get involved with the wrong type of people and drugs, and then they end up going to prison. That's what the government's ensuring. It's not ensuring the success of anyone. And that's why the No Child Left Behind Act is a bunch of bullshit. There's plenty of children left behind in the way our government is designed. And that's how we spend money. And that's why I'm voting for Bernie Sanders. We spend money based on a defense outlook. And that is that every country wants us. So they're going to want to attack us and ruin our freedom. And to prevent that, we need to spend, $600 billion. I think that's close to the current estimate, on our defense budget. And we'll spend, $60 billion, if that, on education. I don't know what our education budget is, but I know for a fact it's much less than our defense. And I guess it's less by a factor of 10. So, that's the current problem in this society. And I explained this to my family member, and they kind of understood it. They didn't want to understand it. But then they brought up the polar bear hunting story, which I don't know if this is true or not, but according, there's a Cleveland councilman. I forget his name. He's Black. And my family member likes him, because he thinks he stands up for the racism that happens against white. And he brought up a story about how apparently in public square of Cleveland, there are some black, like, young adults or teenagers running around and finding white people they could beat up. They were calling it polar bear hunting. Don't know if this is true. If it is true, it sounds racist to me. Another one of those individual racism things, but still, it's individual racism. It's not nearly as detrimental, or even detrimental as institutionalized racism. And here's what I'll leave you with. And I explained this to my family member, and I think this is kind of what the point that settled home. Oh, fuck, I met my girlfriend's, and there are no parking spots. Well, I parked in front of her car. Oh shit, just hit the curb. So I was explaining to this family member that institutional racism is very detrimental for one main reason. And that's because you can't get away from it. White people can get away from individual racism by living with people, working with people, and doing everything socially with people that are of their mindset, of their background, that are white. Because that's the majority. The white majority is what makes up the United States and a lot of European countries. So if they have the majority, they can go wherever they want without having to worry about being put upon or being or having racist comments thrown at them or racist actions thrown at them. So basically, if you're white, you can get away from racism if it exists. It's one, it's more rare, and that might be because you can get away from it. But two, it's very easy to get away from it. So there's really no problem, honestly, if you're really worried about a black person being racist to you, or any minority being racist to you, which I've never been in my life. And maybe that's just because I grew up in a different generation than this family member. Then you can get away from it. You can move to an all-white neighborhood very easily. And it won't affect anything. It won't affect your quality of life. Won't affect your job. Won't affect your relationships. If you're black, you have to function. And you want it, and you want to have a successful job, successful relationships, good education, a good neighborhood. Generally, you have to function with at least some white people. Maybe it's not a completely white neighborhood, but you'll have to function with a good number of white people. It's probably a white majority neighborhood. And that's because of the way that our society is built right now. And I think it stems back to the way we spend our money and the institutional racism that we perpetuate. If you want to be successful, you have to be in a nice neighborhood. And, you know, as I said earlier, Cleveland is one of the most racially segregated geographically, anyways, cities in the United States, and the more black neighborhoods are the poorer neighborhoods in Cleveland. And those are the schools they have to go to. So it's food for thought. Thought I'd do this in honor of Martin Luther King. I might have another small segment later, but that is it for now. So thank you. Have a good day.